Well, hey everybody, welcome back to my channel. I'm Dave from Chase Summit, and we've got another live stream tonight. Tonight I've got a special guest that I'm super excited about, somebody who can talk a lot better than I can. He's the host of a podcast called The Adventure Jogger, who I was honored enough to be part of about a month ago. I think the episode aired, and I just had such a fun conversation with this guy that I had to have him on here just to talk with him again, because he can talk. He's a good talker. So the podcast is called The Adventure Jogger. You can find that on any of your podcasting platforms, your Spotify's, your Apple's, whatever. Make sure to check it out there. And also check out his website at theadventurejogger.com. Of course, I'm talking about the one and only Ryan Pleckelman. Let's bring him on. How's it going tonight, Ryan?
Hey, Dave, it's doing great. And that's an excellent pronunciation of my last name. You have no idea how often that thing is butchered.
I had to re-listen to your podcast a couple of times to roll it off the tongue. You know what I mean? It didn't feel natural at first. You've got too many letters in there, I find. You could remove a couple and still accomplish the same thing.
It's a lot of consonants and not a whole lot of vowels. People look at that. My whole life I've gotten, it's funny because like when I'd start school and there'd be like a new class and the teacher would have their roster and they'd be like, okay, Benji Plour, Jeremy Peterson, Ryan, is there a Ryan P here? And I'd be like, oh, here I am.
So, yeah, that's good. So for people who haven't listened to your podcast, you've got a different spin on the whole running. There's so many different kinds of running podcasts. You've got your very serious, like scientific training, you know, breaking down the VO2 max and the training and all that. And then you've got people like, the classic, the trail. Why am I forgetting the name of that podcast?
The Trail Runner Nation.
There it is. Yeah. We know that one. And you've kind of, struck this balance of like humor and, while also still like hitting the facts and the information from people's accomplishments. And I like that style because I don't like all humor and I don't like all science, and you're kind of just floating in the middle.
Well, it's gotta be a balance, right? Cause it's a running podcast. So you can't talk about, you know, the jokes all the time. It can't be all jokes, but also have you ever, non-runners will know this. Have you ever sat around a whole bunch of runners that are talking about running? That can get so boring that people want to gouge their eyeballs out. And so I think if you kind of have a little bit of fun with it, and I think too, Dave, when we're on the trail, when we're at races, when we're talking with people during long runs, there is this balance of humor and running, like, what do you want to do? What's your year looking like? What are you training for? But you're also sharing stories about where you come from and just trying to have some laughs. It's so I kind of try to really create that long run, having fun with your friends atmosphere.
Yeah, I love that. Cause that is the weirdest thing about an ultra marathon. You could be in a 100 miler, 60 miles in, and just show up next to some person you don't know at all. And they're running the same pace as you. So you end up in this conversation and likely end up sharing your entire life story to this total stranger. That is such a unique experience. And you walk away feeling like best friends after that.
Right. You do. Thing. And then your friends on Facebook after that, and you start liking all their pictures and, you know, you're living in that world. But yeah, I think trail running and ultra running has this really great way of breaking down a lot of barriers quick. Like normal friendships, Dave, you know, you have like this period of, do I get to know this person? Do I like this person? You know, you hang out a little bit. And then as time goes on, you get to know their story and a bond forms. With trail running and ultra running, that bond forms quickly because it cuts out all the baloney, right? Like you don't have all the time to get to know that person and to them lightly let you in a little bit. The barriers come down quick and you get to know somebody, you know, over the span of however many miles, and it kind of forges a really quick, strong friendship.
Yeah. I am curious, how long have you been doing this? What was your first ultra marathon? Running, not podcasting.
Yeah, my first ultra marathon would have been 2013. Someone's going to look it up on Ultra Sign Up and say it was 2014. No, it was the Music City Trail Ultra, which is in Nashville. But I did a really great race before I went into the ultra scene. I wanted to do this trail marathon. Because, you know, I got into running the same way everyone else did, like a lot of people, where I wanted to lose weight and that sort of thing. And I tried a triathlon, and I really just like the running part of it. And so I got to do a marathon, and there was an old couple at the marathon that I did that were talking. They were marathon maniacs, and they were talking about, you know, they had their shirts on and everything. And they were talking about a race that they did in Central Tennessee that was so hard, they couldn't finish. They got pulled from the course. It was rocks and stream crossings and all of that. And I'm like, what? Excuse me, I'm sorry to eavesdrop, but what race are you talking about? And they told me it's a race called the Savage Golf Marathon. And I looked it up when I got home. I signed up as soon as it opened. And that was my first trail race, was this brutal a Savage Golf Trail Marathon, where it's boulders and roots and elevation. It is just it's a brutal and beautiful course. I finished, I think, in 7.5 hours.
That's not too
bad. The first time around.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, I was totally not prepared for that. I went back a couple years ago and ran it like 5.5, took 2 hours off my time. I was happy about that. But no, and that race is so underrated, because it's not an ultra marathon. And a lot of people look at that and go, oh, it's a marathon. I don't want to do that. I can't put that sticker on the back of my car. But the Savage Golf Marathon in Tennessee it's harder than most 50Ks. And it is beautiful and brutal. And why that race doesn't sell out in 30 seconds when it opens, I don't know. But look it up, people. Savage Golf Marathon, you need to do it.
Nice. So you did your hard first ultra or marathon, and then you worked your way into marathons or ultra marathons. Mm-hmm. And then one day you're like, you know what? I just want to talk about this on like a platform for hours on end. What led you there?
my buddy Travis Esterby, who's probably one of my best friends, he said to me one day, he's like, you know, you're in radio and you talk for a living and you like running. So why don't you do a running podcast? And he said, you should focus on the Eastern United States, because there's a lot of races and runners here whose stories aren't being shared, because a lot of the attention is on the Western United States. And so the first podcast I did was the East Coast Trail and Ultra podcast. And that was focusing mainly on the East Coast and getting to know runners and races on the other side of the country. And so we kind of found a niche there. If you're bored and want some drama in your life, you can look at how that blew up.
Yeah.
But then I
won't bring that up.
That's okay. Yeah, nothing's off the table. So then with the Adventure Jogger, I kind of wanted to continue to look for stories that may not be shared in other media, and just kind of continue the fun theme. And so the Adventure Jogger name came out of, I was at a race, I was a strolling gym, and I was running past some very serious runners. And I heard them make a comment about the people in the back of the pack. They dismissively called them adventure joggers. And I was like, oh my God, I love that name.
That's amazing.
I love it. So I kept it in the back of my head. And when this opportunity to launch a new podcast came up about a year ago, I'm like, oh, I'm calling it the Adventure Jogger. So
that is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I would feel honored to be called an adventure jogger, you know, out there in the wild.
Oh, but here's the thing, Dave. So many people are anti-J word. Like, there are people that will not listen to my podcast because it's got the J word in it. They're like, I'm not a jogger, I'm a runner.
And that's where at the beginning I said you've got this scientific kind of running podcast, and then you've got the full-on humor, and you're landing right in the middle with the jogging.
Yeah.
What do you?
I try not to take myself too seriously. So,
what are you drinking over there tonight?
I am drinking the best beer I have ever had in my entire life. The problem is I live in Tennessee and this is only available in the state of Wisconsin.
Oh wow.
So I have to have family members, because I'm originally from Wisconsin and I moved down to Tennessee for work. So I have to have family members bring this down to me, sneak it across the border so I can have it. It's New Glarus Spotted Cow.
New Glarus Spotted Cow. That is fantastic.
I read the thing once about what it is all. It's like a farm ale.
Okay.
Like farmers used to make it. It's like a cloudy farm ale, and it is so refreshing and so wonderful.
See, I'm real boring. I've just got a Sierra Nevada Torpedo here. But
you know, that's a safe choice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a safe kind of guy. Plus, I'm not like a heavy beer drinker, so I just...
No.
This is my podcast beer, you know? This is what I bring here.
You don't have the hat. You don't have the heavy, the beer guy hat. You know the one I'm talking about? It's like the flat, like oh, British flat taxi driver hat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The craft beer guy wears that. Right. We've got a few people in the chat. Hey, if you're watching, make sure you tell us where you're from in the chat. If you've got any questions for us from an ultra running or podcasting perspective, we'd love to hear from you. We've only got a few right now, but we've got, whoa, that is way too small. You know what the problem is, Ryan?
Yeah. What is it?
I'm streaming in 4K and I didn't mean to.
Oh, yeah. Is that bad?
There we go. That's moving around.
Okay.
It looks normal, all right? What if I just did this the whole time? That'd be weird, right? We got Matt LeGrand. Looking forward to this one. Thanks for joining, Matt. Chris King.
Hello, Matt.
Hello from Winnipeg, Canada, where it's minus 32 this morning. Holy, is that Celsius or Fahrenheit? I hope it's Celsius. Because that is...
Don't bring me that freedom thing. I only go by Fahrenheit. You keep your Celsius to yourself, Chris. But it's funny because I made a... Hey, Fernando.
Hey, Fernando.
I tried this thing where I was going to run... I wanted to see if baseball shirts were good to run in. You know, with those 3/4 length sleeves?
Yeah.
And so I have adventure...
Cotton or like...
Cotton.
What?
Yeah,
cotton kills, man. Haven't you heard the phrase?
My nipples were fine afterwards, but I tried it and it was really fantastic in cold weather, because it's not too much and it's kind of Goldilocksy. It's not too much. It's just right. And so I put a comment on Instagram about, hey, you know, baseball shirts are great for cold weather running. And then someone had to remind me, Tennessee cold weather running. The guy in Winnipeg, you wear a baseball shirt, -32, you're going to die. Don't wear the baseball shirt in -32.
Well, he's probably adapted by now, right? If you're a native, you know, your -32 might be your 40. You know, your +40 down there.
Exactly.
South.
Yeah. Right.
What is a bad day for a run in your area?
Boy, you know, we don't have a whole lot of bad days here, and that's kind of the downside of running in the South. Is you're really not forced to take an off season, because you can run literally all the time. A couple years ago, we had a pretty bad ice storm, and so the roads were covered in ice for a while, but I just took some sheet metal screws and put them in the bottom of an old pair of running shoes and just ran with those, and that was okay.
Nice. Yeah, that's like my go-to. I much prefer that than using something like the micro spikes or the yak tracks or anything. They're just like too clunky for running, and the screws are just enough to dig in. Pretty solid option. What is
and they're $1.50.
Yeah, that's better than $60 for the Catula micro spikes. What's a primo day for Ryan Pleckelman to go for a run? What is like the ideal conditions?
You know, I love if it's 50 to 55 degrees and overcast. That is magic weather.
That's different. Yeah, usually people say 70s and sunny and, you know, beautiful.
Oh, you're gonna sweat your what's off, you know, if you're running that. But overcast and 55, because you're a little cold at the start, right? And you're shivering a little bit because you got tiny shorts on, and you got, you know, your shirt, your tech shirt on, and you're shivering a little bit. But once you get going, that weather. It's like your body's optimal running, because you're not really sweating, so you don't really lose a whole lot. And I love 55 degrees and overcast all day long.
Did you watch any of that Hoka Carbon X2 event with Jim Walmsley?
I, I did not.
Oh man, it was 55 in overcast. It was they kept talking about how it was perfect conditions for this huge effort that he was going to pull off, and he missed it by 11 seconds. Poor guy. I can't even wrap my head around that.
Can you imagine being that close? Now I can't imagine that, because the only way that would happen is if I was on roller skates. You know, like I'm roller skating next to Walmsley going, hey, great job. But yeah, 11 seconds off the world record. He got the American record though, so that's not too shabby.
By like 18 minutes, by quite a mm-hmm. bit. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
We got some more folks in the chat here.
Hello, everyone.
Hi from Chicago. We got Ryan Clayton in the house. Thanks for joining, Ryan. Brad Stanford from Knoxville, Tennessee. He's down in Europe.
Not too far from me. Yeah.
Chris King, Celsius. Oh, good. So you're not.
Oh, God.
Hi from Australia. Sorry. Hey, thanks for joining. Good day, awesome. Mate. Good day, everyone from Brisbane, Australia. We got two Australians watching our live stream. How awesome is that?
Hey, I love Australians. And we love the. Go ahead.
We got your buddy Jeff on here saying, hey, Puff Daddy.
It's Pluck Daddy, Jeff. Get it right. I love Australians. They have the best slang in the world. I have an Australian friend, and he told me that in Australia, they call liquor stores bottle-o's.
Bottle-o's.
I think that's fantastic.
I'm just trying to understand where that could come from. Because, you know, their words kind of morphed out of other words, right? So where did bottle-o come from?
Well, maybe one of our Australian viewers can let us know where that comes from. But I loved Bottle-O's, and they call McDonald's Macca's.
Wow. That's better than McDonald's. So, I like that.
Oh, yeah. We're going to Macca's and then the Bottle-O.
Let's dig into these questions that I got for you here. I just I just kind of jot these down beforehand. Let's talk about here's a good one. So what's your, what is the furthest distance you've run at ultra?
103 miles or 106. Cause you know, those 100 milers are always like just about.
Yeah. It's either 97 or 105.
right. Exactly. And it's funny, cause you're like, what difference does it make if it's 106 miles?
It's a difference.
When your watch says 100, you're like, why am I not done?
But
this is stupid.
But the even worse way to do it is if you hit 98 at the finish line, then you got to walk around the parking lot until your watch clips off that that 100 number. You can't just walk away, you know? That's crazy. So,
do you remember do you remember the old days when the GPS watches first came out and was the Garmin Forerunner, what was it, the 300?
The
305?
Yeah, the chunky boy, the big one.
Right. Like you're wearing a computer on your wrist.
Oh, yeah.
And people would walk around before a run. They'd walk around the parking lot like this, holding their watch up to the sky, thinking that would get them a signal faster.
Yeah, there's probably
hang on, guys, I don't have a signal.
There's probably still a few of them out there at the races, still waving their hand in the air with like a Phoenix 6 on their wrist. So in your experience with that 100-mile distance, what's your favorite distance? Like is 100, where did you have the most fun? Because for me, I feel like a 50K is a lot of fun, but 100's like you're grinding. You're grinding it for a long time.
You know, there is a satisfaction in a 100-miler that I've not found at other distances. Like 50Ks are great. Mm. And that's kind of the shape I'm in right now. I'm not in 100 mile shape. I'm in 50K shape.
I feel you.
And so, yeah, Rona, man, I went in a shape, out of shape, in shape, out of shape. But anyway, there is this with 100 mile distance. There is this satisfaction. And I don't know if it's just mental or whatever, but there is this, and especially with my group of friends, Stafford being one of them and Patrick Green and Travis Esterby, where you can't run a 100-miler without them. Like they will be there. You don't have a choice. The only way my boys ain't showing up for a race is if I don't tell them, but they'd find out somehow and they'd be there at the starting line. So experiencing all of that, the highs and the lows and the ups and the downs and the, you know, you go from not being able to run a step, you're like, oh my God, I'm 35 miles into this. And I don't know how I'm going to do the rest of the mileage because I can barely walk. And then all of a sudden, 10 miles later, you're running at a 9-minute mile again. And just the ups and the downs and seeing your friends and the celebration of, oh my God, you're here. Now you've got a pacer. And so you've got this quality time with your friends. It's unmatched really by any distance I've run so far.
Yeah, that's a heck of an experience. And that bonk, you know, we all have it. Everybody's got it at some point in the 100. And coming back from it is a weird experience because when you're in the low, you feel like you're done. You know, this is over. Mm-hmm. And then out of nowhere, you crawl out of that hole and you start clipping off miles. And it goes from, you know, 14 mile pace and to a 12 mile pace and then to a 10. And you're like, what the heck? I'm running again. It's a really...
It is. And yeah, and it's weird because, you know, the 50K distance, if you've done a 50K, awesome. Because so many people will never even think that's possible.
Yeah.
50 mile distance, I mean, that is an incredible accomplishment in itself. But it's just something about that 100 mile distance where you're basically doing something for a day, right? And you're away from technology and you're away from the world and you're just kind of living moment to moment. And it changes after you get over the excitement of the starting line and running with some friends and some early chatter. Once you get into those middle miles, you get into this state of zen where you're living moment to moment and you're living in the present and you're not consumed with what do I have to do at work next week or, you know, anniversary's coming up, what am I going to get my wife? It's just what, you know, one
is your
what
is your anniversary next week?
No, August 5th is my anniversary.
Nice job calling that out on the spot. Well done. She'll be proud of you.
I love you, honey. August 5th, 22 years this August 5th.
That moment though, that what you're talking about there when you're like in that meditative state, that is the weirdest feeling. You're like, it's just a machine at that point. You're like, eat, drink, run, eat, drink, run. And you just kind of go into that. It's like a primitive, you feel like a caveman a little bit. Just moving forward step by step and drinking and eating what you need. And that's like that's why we run, right? Like at the end of the day, we're all looking for that moment during the run to clear your mind, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
Take another swig here.
Yeah. So, I had a couple of questions about your podcast. You've got a couple of high level guests on there. You've got Carl Meltzer as your first guest on the podcast, which is pretty awesome. It's a heck of a way to kick it off. Did you ever feel, especially that being your first, well, you're a podcaster, so it wasn't really your first, but did you ever feel intimidated by a guest when they come on and you see them on the screen and you're talking to them?
Yes. Carl, when I first talked to Carl, because I've interviewed Carl probably 3 or 4 times altogether with the podcast I've been on. Well, the first time I talked to him, I was like, oh my God, this is the speed goat. You know, it was very intimidating. And you're like, this is the greatest 100-mile runner of all time.
Yeah.
But as I've gotten to know Carl and I've interviewed him a couple of times, and I actually got to spend some time with him at Pinhoti a couple of years ago and his wonderful wife, Cheryl, that now Carl's Carl. And it was so great of him because when the one podcast went kaput and I was like, oh my God, I'm out of the podcast game now. I'm going to put it down. But people were like, okay, do another one. And I was like, who could I launch it with? And I was like, maybe Carl would be interested. And I messaged Carl and I was like, I'm launching a new podcast. Do you want to be the first guest? And he's like, yeah, I'm in totally. And I was like, oh wow. Well, that was easy.
That's awesome. He's like, I would be just his attitude. He's so like, he's got a lot of energy and he's very confident. I feel like I would be pretty intimidated by that dude talking directly to him.
He's, you know, it's funny because he's got a great sense of humor. that people don't see too much. If you just talk running and training with Carl, like, hey, Carl, how many miles do you run a week? You know, he's answered that question 5,000 times. But, you know, if you he's got so many great opinions, and he's just such a funny guy that if you can get him to open up and just kind of share some stories about his thoughts and his life. I mean, he's a great interview. You need to get him on this, because you would have a great time with Carl.
Yeah. Let me learn how to speak a little bit better, you know, get this whole thing down, because the trick with the live thing, you can't screw up.
Yeah.
We've got some more. We've got an answer to our question about the Bottle O, Ryan. Here we go. Bottle O is from Bottles O Wine or Beer. Or Bottles
okay,
O Beer
good.
Or
makes,
Wine. Makes sense.
Makes perfect sense. Thank you.
So, so Carl was like a great, you know, high level guest to have on. Did you ever have a guest? You don't have to name names, Ryan, but did you ever have a guest on that you maybe wish you didn't have on? maybe a guy named Dave who has a YouTube channel that might be
no
answer.
here is my podcasting philosophy. So what makes a successful interview, be it a podcast or whatever, is it's dynamic personalities sharing compelling stories. That's the recipe. If you can get that, then I think you're going to win 9 times out of 10. Some people are easier to interview than others. Like Andy Jones Wilkins, who I love. Love. Andy, I love you. I know that I can set Andy up with a question and Andy will run with it, right? And he'll share he's got stories. My work is not hard at all when I'm interviewing Andy Jones Wilkins. Or, you know, when I interview Carl, it's not hard work at all, because I just set them up and then they share a great story. But sometimes not everybody's a great storyteller, right?
Yeah.
And so you'll set them up with a great question and you'll get a one word answer and you're like, okay, I got to ask the next question really quick. So I've had a couple of people that I could tell where I was maybe their first or second interview, and that they really were. It's nerve-wracking and that sort of thing. So I don't know if I've had anybody on that I wish I didn't have on, but I definitely have had people on that have made my job as an interviewer easier. And I've had people on that have made my job as an interviewer tougher. I earn that Patreon money more in some episodes than others.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, the sport as a whole, the ultra running sport, kind of invites introverted people to partake. Mm-hmm. And introverted people typically aren't the best interviewers. And it's funny, because I'm pretty introverted in real life. And then I turn this camera on and I'm a lot less awkward when I'm looking at my camera, I guess. It's pretty weird. Now,
no, but I'm jealous of you, Dave. I think what you've done, I like your gear reviews, because there's a sense of authenticity to it. Like, I never feel that Dave Dillon, or as some people know you as, Chase D Summit. No, but I always feel that I'm getting your legitimate self. Like, I never feel like you're putting on a front because, you know, Koros gave you a free watch. This is not free, by the way. I paid for this. But No, this is Apex.
Oh, okay. Sorry to cut you off.
Which then. I kind of regret not getting the Vertex. You're fine. But no, and I appreciate authenticity, and I think this sport is full of authentic people. I think that's what makes ultra running so great, is that there's a lot of authentic people here, and you meet really interesting people, and you get to see there's no masks, there's no baloney. It's just, you get to really know some really wonderful people.
Yeah. It's hard to have a mask when you're like 80 miles into a race. It's like all right. Bets are off at that point. You're throwing up, you're running into the woods to go to the bathroom. Like it's people are dumping water. Well, maybe not during the COVID times, but they're doing your water and your tailwind and everything. Right. It's a whole different story. Oh, we've got a good question.
When your basket is chafed, yeah, it all gets real then.
That's when the whole story, the whole day shifts into something you don't want.
Now I need to sell a shirt that says, when your basket is chafed, it's getting real.
I think you'd sell those pretty well. We get a question from Sean Carroll. He says, Ryan, do you take inspiration or tips from any other interviewers?
You know, I always thought David Letterman was a great interviewer. I really like the way he does it. I think Scott Coomer from 10 Junk Miles is a great interviewer because he's so not the typical broadcaster, yeah. Right? Like Scott is Scott. Yeah. And I like what Scott does. But yeah, so the inspiration, I definitely like the way David Letterman interviewed people because he had a very disarming charm about him. And I think that's kind of the thing is you want to, you don't want it to be confrontational. I don't at least want to do confrontational interviews. I want people to be a star. I want the guest to be the star of the show. And so my philosophy on interviewing is always to treat the guest like a dear friend, like I've known them forever. And how would I talk to a dear friend asking these same questions? And so that's always seemed to help. And I think guys like that. So I'm going to throw out Letterman. I think he's a great interviewer. Scotty Coomer, I think, is a great interviewer. I think the guys from Trail Runner Nation do a decent job. Ultra Runner Podcast, Eric does a great job interviewing people as well. That's all good stuff.
You know who I just started listening to who falls kind of into that scientific category is the Pain Cave with Jay Friedman, I think.
Ooh, yeah, I need to check that out.
Yeah, he goes into like he really harps on the training stuff and most of the athletes he has come. He had like Taggart,
Van Etten.
Yeah, and that was a really good, really good episode about 200 plus mile weeks and just crushing. Yeah. So I've been enjoying that, but also the Adventure Jogger. You become one of my regulars.
Thank you.
I subscribed on Spotify and Apple, so you're up there. And I only have a few. Thank you. I'll be honest. I've only got a few. I'm actually curious. How do you feel, like, as a podcaster, quote unquote, how do you feel about Joe Rogan? How does he make you feel?
You know, I think Joe, when he started, that was a great podcast because he was talking to people that had some very interesting opinions. I think lately he's gotten so bogged down in politics that he's no longer as interesting as he used to be. Cause I think he's interviewing from a point of view and he's trying to have guests and ask questions that reinforce that point of view, where when he was first coming out, he was just like, I've got an interesting person. Here's a question, set you up, knock it out of the park. And so I think since he went to Spotify exclusively, I don't know if someone's telling him like, listen, Joe, we've done the research and we want you to complain about politics more. Oof. I just think the authenticity is kind of has decreased a little bit. But that being said, he's the gold standard of podcasting. I mean, more people listen to the Joe Rogan Experience in an hour than listen to the Adventure Jogger in a week. So, I mean, he is the gold standard.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I've listened to him for a long time and I kind of feel the same way. Mm-hmm. Like the Spotify thing feels weird. There's like 10 minutes of ads, like a full, there's so many ads that you can skip through them. But like if you're running, you're not going to dig out your phone to like swipe through them. But there's a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't mind a couple of minutes. I get that he's got to pay the bills, but it's like literally 10 minutes. And then right in the middle, there's like a DraftKings ad. It's just crazy. But that's the one thing that's bothering. And then like the content just doesn't feel as raw as it used to be. There's always some sense of like, that's Joe Rogan. He doesn't, give a F. He's going to say or do whatever he wants. And now it feels a little bit moderated, which isn't great.
Yeah. Yeah, he's lost that authenticity, which, I mean, hopefully he gets back. If someone threw me $150 million and said, Ryan, why don't, on your running podcast, why don't you start complaining about politics? I'd look at that check and go, man, that's $150 million. I don't really want to complain about politics, but it's $150 million.
Yeah, there's a level at which your reputation just doesn't matter anymore.
Exactly. And $150 financial. Million dollars is that level.
Here's a good question from Jody. We've got from someone coming from overseas. What would the top three ultras on the East Coast be to run? Do you have a comment on that?
Okay. Yes. First of all, Jody, sign up for the Pinhoti 100. The Pinhoti 100 is the southeastern 100 miler of choice. It is a wonderfully run race. It is a beautiful course. It's point to point. It's well supported. It is just an absolutely fantastic race that you have to do. The Heiner View Trail Challenge, I've not run it, but I've talked to people that have. That needs to be on your list because it is a race where I think 1,500 people run that, and it is incredible. Let's see, one more. What level are you looking for, Jody? Okay, I guess we can go anywhere with this. I think the Yeti 100, and here's why. Jason Green, who I've known peripherally for about 3 or 4 years, but this past year, I've gotten to know him really well. Like, Jason and I will text each other and, you know, that sort of thing, and chat on the phone. And I've gotten to know Jason Green really well. And Jason has created this community, this atmosphere, this wonderful thing. And the Yeti is the epitome of all things Jason stands for. Inclusion, you know, celebrating people's victories. It's just the atmosphere that he's created there. So the course is not great. Let's not lie and say the course is scenic and beautiful and it's mountains. But what Jason has created on that course with that race, it's something to behold. And I think it changes people when they run it because they feel like, okay, I've found my tribe now. And it gives people a sense of belonging. So I would say those three races are something to do on the East Coast.
I like that. She followed that up with, I've never run real mountains, so I'd like to experience one. On that note, if you're willing to travel to the Northeast, check out the Kilkenny Ridge 50 miler. That was such, no one knows about it. I think the first year we had, I don't know, maybe 75 runners, but it's got, it's 50 miles, but it has 17,000 feet of elevation gain.
Oh!
And it's beautiful though. Like, you go up over a couple of 4,000 footers in New Hampshire and you're on, it's just like, you're really out there. The aid stations are backcountry. So the volunteers have to hike in with all the supplies and filter water for you before you show up. So you're like, you're out there. By the way, she is a he. Oh, I think.
Okay. Sorry, Jody.
Jody, sorry. I apologize for that.
That's okay. However you identify, Jody, we love you.
But yeah, check out the.
Hey, I will.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying. Go ahead.
One more race that I'll add to that list. It is technically on the Beast Coast because of where the Mississippi River goes. But the Superior 100 is a race that needs to be on everybody's list. It is so beautiful, so brutal, is so well run that if it's not on your list, put the Superior 100 on your list, and it's in Minnesota on the shores of Lake Superior. It is life-changing.
I know a few people around here that have actually last year, a lot of people around here seemed to sign up for it, but I think it got canceled. No. Did it get canceled? Or I think they might have pulled out. I forget how that went down. But that's pretty high profile. Is that hard to get into?
It's got a lottery now, many races. But I don't think it's not like Western States level lottery where you're never going to get in, which, by the way, I was so excited This is a great story of how ultra running brings people together. So Kyle Curtin, who just set the Pitchell FKT, who set the Tahoe Rim FKT, who's the also the course record holder for the Tahoe 200, he was stationed at Fort Campbell. He was in the Army. He was in a group called the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. Jeff Stafford was also in that. And so that's where I live. I live in Clarksville, Tennessee, right outside of Fort Campbell. All my friends are military. Travis's 5th Special Forces Group, Stafford's retired 160th. But Kyle, I got to know him because he lived here. And so we would run together and he would, we'd do races together and travel together. And he became like an uncle to my children, you know, like he would babysit my kids, which was so great. But so he currently is 15th on the waiting list for Western States. And he's like, he was here. He came and visited for the holiday. He was here. If you want to see some epic beer mile photos, you can go check out
the
Adventure Jogger on Instagram. Yeah. The professional runner threw up. But anyway, he is currently 15th on the wait list for Western States.
Oh, wow.
And usually they go into the 20s into the wait list. So I'm fingers crossed. I'm going to look at the entrance list and message a bunch of people and tell them that they're not in shape and they need to drop out. Because if Kyle gets into Western States, I will be there.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's like a bucket list. I mean, even for people who think it's getting to the point where it's like too big, I feel like it still has that, there's something to it. Like just to experience it one time in your life, that's something special.
Yeah. And I've experienced it as a crew and a pacer. I want to say, was it 2017? My buddy Travis Esterby ran it. And so I was able to crew and pace there. And it's a whole other ball game and it's so much fun. And it really is the Super Bowl of American 100-mile running.
Yeah, for sure. What comes in second? What other event has that kind of profile? I mean, Hard Rock has its own following, right? But
Yeah.
Hard
Rock's so hard to get into though.
Yeah. And it's a hard course.
mm-hmm. Hence the name.
Way too hard of a course. On the topic of ultra running, Ryan, I'm curious, what is your go-to calorie, like intake? What is your go-to food when you're out there in the suffer fest, you're at a low and you feel like you got to eat something? What do you reach for?
Pickles.
Oh,
like, I get mad if they don't have pickles.
Like straight up dill pickles, like a spear.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. just gnaw on them. Pretzels are good too.
So
when you go to an aid station,
you dip your hand in the pickle
jar.
There's
no pretzels or pickles.
And then you get all vinegary and wet, and then you stick your hands in the pretzel bowl with that vinegar hand to get that all nice and salt coated.
Potatoes are good too. Potatoes are really good.
Yeah, it's a weird thing because the boiled potato, like right now, if you put a bowl of boiled potatoes in front of me, it would be a hard pass. But in the moment, a salted boiled potato is really it cuts to the to the core.
Yeah, that it does.
I really like. I did one race with avocado black bean wraps, and at the time I was like, that's probably a bad idea, but I ate them for like 50 miles, and they were great. So it's a little bit different.
You should not say that out loud. You'll get kicked out of the Beast Coast for avocado black bean wraps.
Hey, man, it was at a hard race.
So it's that's a count. San Francisco treat right there. That's a West Coast treat. Hunt Brothers Pizza. That's what you should be eating.
So you've got some kids, right? How old are they?
I have three kids. I have a daughter, Ava, who's 19 years old. She is a sophomore at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. And I've got a son, Cohen, who is 16 years old, and a daughter, Evelyn, who is 14. My son is a runner for cross country. So that is a great spectator sport to watch. I don't know, Dave, if you've been to a high school cross country meet in a while.
Can't say I have.
Okay, here's the thing. All other sports like football and baseball, you sit in a bleacher and you're like, hey, good job, kid. Cross country, you're running all over the course, right? Like you'll look at the course map and you'll go, okay, I can see him here, here, and here. And it's the only sport I know where you can get a 3 mile workout in just running as fast as you can all over the course to yell at your child. So
that's awesome.
I hope your kids get into that when they get older, because your kids are young, right, Dave?
Yeah, I got 2, 4, and 8 right now. It's a handful during a pandemic for sure. I was going to ask you, I think I know the answer now. Do your kids think ultra running's cool, or like their dad's kind of lame for being into this, you know, this clique that we're in?
They think dad is lame, but they think ultra running's kind of cool.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, my kids think it's like, impressive that I, you know, can run far, but I don't know if there's any interest in actually running. Not yet, at least.
Now I will say this, and people have said this to you 100 times before, Dave, but they grew up fast. Cherish every single second of it, because before you know it, much like me, Dave, you'll be dropping your daughter off at college. You'll be loading things, you know, into the car, and you'll be setting up her dorm room. And then you'll be, as you're driving away, you'll be going, oh my God, my baby is in college. And then you remember what you were like in college, and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. You know, right now I got 3 boys, so I'm not going to think about what that would be like. but then I think about the trouble that I got into as like a college age kid. Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah.
It's a terrible thing. let's think about happy thoughts, Ryan.
Yes. Let's think about happy thoughts.
Now, what do you think? I'm curious your thought on this. What do you think races are going to look like in 2021? Like, I know a lot of them, like for me, I've got a couple on my calendar, but they like the Vermont 100 sent out this kind of, it was weirdly worded. It was like kind of a warning. It was like, dear runner, just be cautious about the potential of this not happening. And I was like, what? I've already been deferred once. So you deferred me twice. It was just a really weird email to get. And I'm curious, like, do you have races on the calendar? Are you feeling like they're going to happen?
I think they're going to happen. And I think it depends on what part of the country you're in. In the American South, they're going to happen.
Yeah,
because true. Like the town that I live in, it's like, what's this Corona nonsense? You know? And so there's different levels of it. I think races will happen. I've been in this weird frame right now where every time I sign up for a race and I think nothing's going on, all of a sudden life comes and it's like, oh crap, I guess I am busy that week. So, but I think races are going to happen. And I'm hoping that, you know, vaccines are rolled out quickly, and, you know, they talk about herd immunity, which I'm a radio DJ. I don't get all that stuff, but I hope we reach it soon, because I think part of the soul of ultra running and trail running is the interactions with people.
Yeah.
And so it's the hugs. It's the aid station volunteer that when you're at your absolute lowest, I remember this was years ago at a race, a really hard race. And I was working an aid station with Jeff Stafford. And Jeff Stafford is a national treasure. If you do not follow him on Instagram, follow him now. He is one of the greatest human beings I've ever met in my entire life. When I say he is family, he is absolute family. You know, he is a grandfather to my kids. He's a second dad to me, you know. But he says, eat
rice balls. That was his last comment.
No, oh, don't make me tell that story, Jeff. But no. And so I remember it was getting towards the cutoff time, right? And so just seeing Jeff interact with people at their lowest, and how there was one young lady who was about to give up. And Jeff went into dad mode, which Jeff can do, right? And he can be everybody's dad. And so he just was able to slip into dad mode and talk to this woman in a way where the idea of quitting all of a sudden just wasn't a reality for her. And awesome. He was able to get her out of the chair, get food into her, get her out onto the trail, and get her moving. And she finished this brutal race. And so with this contactless free world that we live in, I think ultra running and trail running it, we'll do what we have to do to survive. But when we can get back to that contact world where you can have an aid station worker put their arm around you and tell you, like, you can do this and I believe in you and you can get to the next aid station. Let's get up. Let's get food in you. Let's get going. When that happens again, and I'm hoping it happens by summer, but what do I know? I play Taylor Swift records. What do I know? That's when the sport will return to when it's at its best.
Yeah, I agree. I'm kind of scared of that, honestly, because I don't know if I, like, it's not great to say, but like not having all that, it almost feels like, why bother?
Right, it does.
If we're doing like staged starts in the crewless aid stations and volunteerless aid stations, even maybe you're just, mm-hmm. there's food and water there. I don't know if the magic would still be there to run 100 miles, you know?
Yeah, I think especially like maybe 50K, maybe you could get through a 50K with the COVID restrictions.
Yeah, but I think the hundreds will be hard to swallow for a lot of people without a crew, without volunteers cheering you on, without a big party at the finish line. It's a hard pill to swallow. Like, I'll run a 50K and not have a party. Mm-hmm. I'll still have a party at home.
Yeah. But if I'm running a 100-mile race and I see Andy Jones Wilkins out there and I can't hug him, that's a world that I don't want to live in.
Yeah. Yeah. I just hope, up here, it's different. I think in the Northeast, people are still very scared up here. School, like our kids don't go to school. And that's what has me concerned about specifically the races up, Vermont 100, for instance. They sounded optimistic, but that second email kind of deflated me. And, it's like, I want to train. I want to like be my best that day. And if I can't, and like having that in the back of my mind that the rug's going to be pulled out from under me, it's not a great feeling, you know? You want to go into it feeling like, all right, that's the day on the calendar and you got to be ready for it. But now you don't know.
Well, here's the thing, Dave. Why don't you sign up for a Southern race? You can fly into Nashville. You can stay at my house and I'll put my crew together for you and we'll get you running. We'll get you sign up for Pinhoti. We'll get you running Pinhoti.
It's a great idea, actually. Are they requiring testing to get into the states down there?
It's in Alabama, Dave. You know the answer to that question.
I had to ask.
This ain't Vermont, Dave. It's Alabama.
I was watching that the Hoka Carbon X2 on live on YouTube, and they were talking about how they got around all the COVID restrictions by all the athletes were tested before they got on the plane, after they got off the plane, at the front door of the race, they got a rapid test. All of the volunteers, it was like everybody got 10 tests, to be super sure.
Yeah, right.
And then they, inside the dome there where they all were, they had like a little safety bubble where no one wore a mask and it was normal life in there. I kind of want to open one of those up in my town, it's a little safety bubble. Everyone gets tested on the way in. And we just, we act like it's back to regular life in there.
Welcome to the safety bubble presented by Chase the Summit.
That's my next venture. Maybe I'll invest in that. Like those igloos. Do you have igloos down there for like restaurants?
No, but what we have, in the town where I live in, do you have those pop-up Halloween stores that show up?
Yeah, Spirit, they're called.
We had one. Yeah, we had one. It was the first year they had it. It was this big inflatable orange pumpkin. It was huge, this huge inflatable orange pumpkin. But if anything, the southern sun will fade everything. So year one, it was a big inflatable pumpkin. Year two was an inflatable pumpkin. Year three, it was a big white gourd. So we do not have any igloos or anything. We're actually in restaurants here. You can go out to eat and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, we can do that here, but like a lot of them are offering these outdoor like inflated igloos where you're by yourself, you're separated, it's sanitary, it's all sanitized, and like you pay extra money to get into it. It's like it's a whole thing, and they heat it so it's not super cold in there. I was just curious down in the south if you have that sort of thing. So do you have
go ahead. I was going to say, are you ultra sign upping Pinhoti right now? Because I made all those promises to you.
Yeah, it's on my screen right now. Curious. That would be nice to, you know, get into a real, you know, a real race that's not modified. Mm-hmm. I feel like the culture has been embedded into me up here now where I'm very isolated. I have a desk job. If I'm doing my, you know, mechanical engineering work or I'm at this office doing this. So I feel like I don't see a lot of people. I feel like it'd be a shock for me to be like at a starting line without masks and everyone just kind of doing their thing. People are wearing masks, right? Down there?
You know, my wife did a half marathon a couple of months ago and they made everybody wear masks at the starting line. But once you got moving, you could take it off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people are wearing masks. People are wearing masks here in the store. There's always that random, I was going to say a bad word, but I stopped myself. There's always that random person, we'll call them a tool, that is making a political statement and not wearing a mask. And I always feel bad for the grocery store employees. Like, hey, buddy, that person's getting paid $8 an hour. They do not want to hear your spiel that you saw on the internet. Just put a mask on and get into the grocery store.
Yeah, it's more about the, like, just respect at that point. It's not about, like, whether or not you believe in it.
Yeah. I look at it like this. Okay, let's just say masks do nothing, okay? I'm okay with the slight inconvenience of having to put something over my face if it means that maybe, just maybe, someone won't get sick and take that to their loved one who's old and frail and gets COVID and doesn't take it very well. Putting something over my face is a slight inconvenience compared to the risk of, I don't know, killing someone's grandma.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, that's
our COVID talk for this stream.
That is. Check that off the list.
So I'm curious, do you have races on the calendar for 2021?
I had a couple of races on the calendar. I'm kind of trying to play a game of wait and see and wait until what races I can get into maybe a month or so beforehand instead of signing up for everything 6 months ahead of time. I do want to go back to Strolling Gym this year, and I want my wife to go because she's gotten into running now, and she's a half marathon extraordinaire, and so I want her to do that, at least the half marathon. So Strolling Gym, I'm going to sign up for that pretty soon, and I'm hoping Kyle, my buddy, gets into Western State so I can go crew and pace that a little bit, and let's look for some fun things in the fall where hopefully the world goes back to normal and we have races where we can hug again.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're all looking forward to that. Okay, Ryan, we're coming up on an hour, so I think we can just about wrap it up. Do you have any final thoughts? I'll put you on the spot.
I will. Okay. Okay.
I thought I'd make that real awkward for you.
So Jeff Stafford mentioned rice balls earlier on, and that comes from a race he did. He did the Arkansas Traveler years ago, and the coach that he had, who I've always kind of thought was a moron, but Jeff seemed to like him, told him to try fueling on rice balls with egg and soy sauce in them. So he had made all of these rice bars with egg in them. And the race in the middle of the day got up to 80 degrees.
Ooh.
And so he's eating these rice and egg things all day. And at about mile 60, Jeff projectile vomited rice and egg all over the side of the trail. And it was, I'm like, dude, there's egg in there. It's 80 degrees. How did you not think that was going to turn your stomach?
Yeah, so that comes from. The idea of a rice ball sounds good until you mention the egg part. Right. Then it sounds really bad.
Why are you putting eggs in something you're going to be eating and it's 80 degrees outside? It makes no sense. Makes no sense at all.
Well, thanks for that final story, Ryan. I appreciate that. I'm sure our listeners did too. if you've made it this far into this live stream or the podcast or whatever you're listening to, make sure to go over and subscribe to Ryan's podcast called The Adventure Jogger on Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And also check out his merch store. He has Adventure Jogger joggers, where you can actually jog in Adventure Jogger joggers, which is a lot of jogging.
Yeah, the jogging pants.
A lot of jogging in one sentence. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please give us a thumbs up down below. Consider subscribing to the channel. Really appreciate that. And with that, we'll see you guys in the next one. I'll probably do another live stream in a couple weeks, maybe a week. I'll see you then. Thanks for joining, everybody.